Hello, hello, and welcome to Good Areas Live. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere. We've got some people in the comments already. Genius Genie is here, as is Ujjawal Kashyap, Pranoy Ghosh, Ankush Shah, Soham Chatterjee, SIR B12, and who else do we have over here? Bharat Biduri, Arko, and Umang Jain. So hello to all of you guys. And what we'll be talking about on this particular episode of Good Areas Live is India's win over Australia. They defeated them by 4 wickets in Dubai in the first semi-final of the Champions Trophy with 11 deliveries to spare. And India now have actually made the finals of the last 4 ICC trophies. They made the 2023 ICC World Test Championship final. They lost the final at home in the ODI World Cup to Australia. Then they won the T20 World Cup in the Caribbean. And now they find themselves once again in an ICC ODI final. And yeah, even their third Champions Trophy, Jared, that they've made the final, right? 2013, they won it. 2017, they lost it. And they've made it yet again. So really kind of stamping their authority on world cricket.
Yeah, they might struggle to make the next WTC final though, mate.
Yeah, that one's
you,
gone.
Are and you saying fair, that India is a very good team? It's been hilarious this week of like exactly the same thing happened this week that happened in the last T20 World Cup and the last ODI World Cup, which is like suddenly you start getting asked if every game is fixed. It's like, have you guys watched India play in the bilaterals? Like, who's getting close to India in the bilaterals? Like, outside of a couple of dodgy wickets in Sri Lanka where they went away, where they were having to use random dudes as their frontline spinners, they've basically been better than everyone consistently for a long period of time. They should be good. Yeah. If anything, they have underperformed. If anything, there's been a lack of match fixing that has been the key issue here.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, like, we expected them to steamroll this Australian team because of all the people missing and the conditions which suited India a lot. And pound for pound, they were so much stronger. But Australia actually pushed them quite hard, harder than anyone else has pushed them all tournament. And, you know, there were moments in this game where Australia really could have seized the opportunity to go one better and kind of, you know, take a heavy advantage, a strong advantage in the game. You think of the first innings where after 36 overs, Australia were 196 for 4, right? They could have potentially gone on to score 300 or even 300 plus at that point. And then when Rohit Sharma was removed by Cooper Connolly in the second innings, right? I mean, at that point, the game was wide open. But then if you look at their rap sheet, Australia's 3 drop catches, crucial ones at that, Rohit twice and then Virat Kohli. That doesn't look good, does it?
No, but there were too many things that had to keep going right for Australia, I think, anyway, right? Like, so they had to take the one-handed screamers. Yeah, they had to, you know, Marnus and Maxwell, Cooper Connolly's he just should have taken, but, you know, but they had to take the one-handed screamers. And also, this is really weird, and this is where conspiracy people completely disappear. That wicket started really slow. Do you remember? When India were batting, the ball wasn't coming on well. Somehow it got faster as the innings went on, right? That is the complete opposite of what you would have expected that wicket. In fact, everyone was like, batting first is a good idea there, and it might become a bit of a porridge towards the end of the game. It wasn't a porridge, right? So I think Australia needed to take all the catches, and they really needed the wicket to help them a lot more than it did. And in the end, it probably just it came on fine. I mean, it was still tricky. It was never an easy pitch to bat on. But if you're not trying to hit boundaries, which India wasn't, it was fine.
Yeah, I mean, it was really interesting with respect to the toss, right? I mean, I originally thought Australia have made the right call by opting to bat first, and the power play was always going to be important for them, which, you know, after Shami dropped head first on 0 and then Smith on 36, I felt like Australia ended up with more runs than they should have. But in that power play, they were able to get to their team 50 in, what, 7.2 overs. Travis Head, after the life that he got, went a bit berserk, as you expect him to. There was that 1 6 he hit off a flick, which was so Travis Head-esque. And then there was that 1 massive 6 down the ground versus Kuldeep. Those are the 2 shots I can remember. Interestingly enough, Varun Chakravarthy had never, ever bowled a single delivery to Travis Head in any competitive cricket. And he gets him out first ball. Perhaps Head could have maybe seen out a few deliveries. What's your take on that? Because that was a major battle won for India right there.
It's a tough one. There was a viral video the other day of Mike Hussey talking about when he first became a batting coach and passing some information to all the batters, and MS Dhoni going out like to Rashid Khan coming off and go, don't ever send me anything ever again. Right? Don't ever talk to me about batting again. And as an analyst, I'm like, sometimes those sorts of things happen, right? And so do you really want to say to Travis Head, got to be careful, this Varun Chakravarthy is really, really good? Or do you just want Travis Head to go out there and be Travis Head? And I don't think there's a right answer to that, right? I think if you have a situation where you are where you just decide, I'm going to go absolutely nuts here, and he fails, you're just like, oh, maybe we should have talked to him. And if you don't talk to him, and he ends up pushing and prodding around against Varun Chakravarti and he gets stuck, everyone's like, oh, now he's not Travis Head anymore. So yeah. I don't think there is a right explanation on this. Just to say, Abhijit is saying, I'm fading away on these videos. I'm in Boston, mate. So this is the Wi-Fi I have.
Blame it on Boston, of course. But anyway, I think like even if Travis Head was dismissed by Chakravarti first ball and India won that battle, as did Chakravarti, he had done his job. He provided that start in the power play, a 33 ball, 39. And that's what you kind of expected him to do. And
he'd done his job.
Yeah, he was dropped on zero.
He's done his job in a normal game for Australia.
Yes.
In this game, true. He had to bat for another 10 overs. I'm not having a go. Like, I'm not saying, oh, that was his fault. Like, he's still playing his normal cricket. But they weren't going to win unless he had a substantial innings.
Yeah, and I suppose, like, he got a life as well. Both the catches that Shami dropped. Sure, the Smith one was a touch harder because he bludgeoned that one. But, I mean, it hit his hand flush in the middle, so I think he should have got that. But the Travis Head one, I felt like he had more time. He kind of tried to catch it too quickly, and that was kind of just plopping towards him, and he could have done better. But then again, I mean, look, Head gave them a start and then Smith got set.
Yes.
So Australia, at that 36 over mark, 196 for four, they really should have capitalized on it. And then, of course, if you're giving Rohit 3.0 two chances, which he didn't kind of make the most of, and then Virat Kohli in a chase. You do not drop Virat Kohli in a chase in an ICC knockout fixture. That is absolutely detrimental. You've kind of signed your own death wish at that point.
It's a chase made for him as well. Like, it really is. Big ground. You've got defensive bowlers. It's not a tough, like, as in, it was probably 10 or 15 runs beneath par, right, on that kind of a pitch, all things considered. It was just absolutely made for him. You know, the catch was just unfortunate, wasn't it? It was probably the situation where Cooper Connolly probably catches that if Glenn Maxwell isn't there. And Glenn Maxwell would have caught that if Cooper Connolly hadn't moved. It's one of those ones where it was kind of in the middle. I always feel really weird about the fielder close in on the offside in that position as a spinner. I've had captains put him, and I always go, no, put him on the leg side. And they're always like, I'll be your leg spinner and you're spinning the ball in this area. And I was like, yes, but it's just, I don't know what to cover when they're in that area. You know, either put them at short cover or put them at short mid on. So it happens, but you're right. That was it. I mean, that was the chance that they had to win the game.
And Cooper Connolly had a very fascinating game. Now, we both, or the both of us, were expecting Jake Fraser-McGurk to play this game. And
I don't know if we were expecting, like, were we? We were thinking that's what we would do. I'm not sure anyone was expecting it.
I mean, he could have capitalized on the power play, but Australia probably thought that, look, Cooper will bowl some overs as well. And he bowled 8 of them, to be fair, and dismissed Rohit. I think 1 for 37 and 8. That was the best performance for him in this particular game because he had a 9-ball duck with the bat. The only delivery on which he got bat and ball was the edge that India then reviewed and he got out. And then he drops Rohit's catch as well. So the man with the worst haircut in all of cricket had a pretty poor game.
I almost lost a lot of money betting on that because I was like, there's no way he could have hit this because I just don't think he'd be close enough to the ball. And had I been watching live, I probably would have put a huge bet on at that stage and be like, no, that's not out. They've got this one wrong. Look, he shouldn't have been doing that job. They made a mistake there. I think they probably should have put Inglis or Alex Carey up the top and allowed him to be in a more normal position. It hasn't cost them the game, but, you know, it is what it is. Like, they went in with two young spinners. It was an experimental side by Australia. And I think I probably, if they weren't going to go Fraser-McGurk, right, then for me, I would have put someone else up the order, whether it be Carey or Inglis, and I would have brought Aaron Hardy in. And I would have gone it from that point of view. Because weirdly enough, in the end, too, all this talk about how, all these pitches are helping India because they spin so much. It didn't spin much.
That's fair. Also, like, a lot of people are saying, Spencer Johnson should have played ahead of Tanvir Sangha. But look, you can say these things in hindsight. On this surface, Australia went for the extra spinner. Now, obviously, both he's not of that same quality.
Yeah, both teams went for the extra spinner. So they both got it wrong.
There's a big gulf in quality, obviously, between Varun Chakravarti and Tanvir Sangha. That's not Tanvir Sangha's fault. If anything, I feel like even though Ben Dwarshi's got like 18, 19 runs, maybe Spencer should have played ahead of him because he wasn't inspiring any confidence whatsoever. He was bowling them at Rohit Sharma's pads. And I mean, look, even though Nathan Ellis, he's a defensive option, he bowled really well at the death, mm-hmm. right? He was probably the pick of Australia's bowlers with 2 for 49. Dwarshi's, his overs, I was thinking, okay, like he's done for. And maybe playing Spencer ahead of Ben would have been the better idea.
It's not like Spencer Johnson had been bowling well. Sometimes you get, especially in a small tournament like this, you get a little bit trapped by the fact that Dwarshi's kept getting good numbers, right? And yeah. so it's like, do we drop the guy who's actually taking wickets when we need wickets? And it's a gutsy, and also he can bat. Spencer Johnson can't bat, right? Like his batting was quite important. I thought from the start,
massive six.
Yeah, I thought from the start that I probably would have gone with Abbott above him, and he's ended up with good numbers. So I'm not saying that they made a mistake, but I probably would never have gone with him to begin with. But the real issue was Tanvir is not a attacking leg spinner in one day cricket. He is in T20 cricket, but he's more of a just slided on in this format. And you look at his list day numbers and they suggest that Cooper Connolly is a defensive option. Glenn Maxwell is a defensive option. Nathan Ellis is a defensive option. You can't win if you're not massively ahead of par, and they weren't massively ahead of par.
Yeah, they could have been like 265 or 64. If you think about it, 196 for 4 and 36 overs. So they were only able to add 68 runs beyond that particular point. And that was a phase in which Australia messed up royally. Let's talk about Steve Smith for a bit, right? It was an interesting innings. Started off rotating the strike very well. He was using his feet to go over mid-on and over the top versus spinners. There were a couple of, you know, Steve Smith-coded cover drives. His awkward heaves and pulls were in there as well. But then the rotation of strike kind of stopped, didn't it? He kind of got stuck at the crease. And then he gets out to a full toss, which really should have been put away. And he gets out in comical fashion, gifting his wicket to Mohammad Shami. How do you kind of rate that innings?
Yeah, it wasn't great. The full toss, by the way, it's very rare you get bowled with the ball hitting the stumps on the full.
Yeah, it wasn't even the base of the stumps, right? Nope. It hit like a little below the mid of off stump.
It's very, I mean, you go back, see highlights of bowled, see how many times you ever see that happen. It's really rare, right? He just got stuck, I think is probably the best way of putting it. I thought he looked really, he played a pull shot early on, and the minute he played it, I was like, oh, he's not seeing the ball grow here. And then I think he knocked another one over mid-on's head later, and it was really forced again. And I was just like, he's just not feeling it today. And I think he was trying to do that thing he does where he almost tricks himself, right? And he's like, oh, no, I'm batting fine and I'm going to play these big shots. I never felt that comfortable with him. And he really, really got himself behind. It's very similar to Kane's innings, right? Where it's really hard on guys like Smith and Kane who've grown up to be the kind of players they are, where they're like, well, I can't go out because if I go out, we won't make any runs. Yeah.
It's interesting how Kane got three chances in that inning. Smith also got a chance on 36. So they weren't able to capitalize or maximize on their fortune because it was going their way. Smith's, the ball hit the base of his stumps, man. Like, are we serious right now? There was even a run-out opportunity in which he survived. So he was having a fortunate day out there and he just couldn't, like, if this was Steve Smith from 10 years ago, he would have struck 100. Easy.
Yeah, no, he would have been in a very different situation. He wouldn't have got them behind. The issue is, I'll just put this up, because you've got someone going, I love Smith today, and then you've got someone else going, he batted well today. That isn't a good innings, right? That's an innings where what you do is you put yourself in a position where the best that can happen is a bunch of freak things have to happen when you bowl. So this isn't Smith's fault. Australia had to be above par to win this game. And the reason they had to be above par to win this game is because they needed to win it with defensive bowling. But when you say it's a good innings without that context, right? And as I said, not Smith's fault, right? But when it comes down to it, it's not a good innings when you're putting yourself in a situation where you are facing that many dot balls and you're moving, you're not moving the game forward. They had to do something else. And that's why he was trying to do that as well. Like, he was trying to do it. He just wasn't batting well. That is not the best he's ever batted in ODI cricket. That's why Head needed to go long, right? Or Inglis needed to come off, or Maxwell needed to come off, right?
How much did he end up with, right? It was 70-something? I can't quite remember, but I'm just keen to see how many deliveries Steve Smith played over here.
Yeah.
Let me pull up the scorecard real quick.
It certainly wasn't. He made 73 off 96. Strike rate of 76. So Williamson's was on a tougher wicket with 67, right? I don't want to have a go at those two guys because they made the runs. But if you're trying to win the game, that innings was never going to get them in a position to be able to win that game. And the reason is because they couldn't take wickets on the other end. So you have to be in a situation where two things could have happened. He could have done that innings a bit, and then the wicket could have fallen apart at the end, and therefore Australia would have got over the line. But if you watch the way he was playing, he knew it wasn't a good innings because he was trying to force the pace and he couldn't do it, right? After the power play, he couldn't find boundaries and he kept getting caught with dot balls. So it was too slow in innings. He put himself in too much of pressure. And, you know, some people would probably say things like, I don't know, if Maxwell comes off, it doesn't matter if Smith makes any runs or not at all, right? Because if Maxwell comes off. So what you're really seeing here is that Maxwell had to come off and Head had to come off because of the pace that Smith has batted at. That's not, what's his normal strike rate?
80? I don't know, 85?
Right? So he's significantly like down on his normal strike rate after starting really quickly, right? That's not how he wanted to bat. So when people say, oh, it's a good innings by him, it's not. If you were to talk to Smith now, I'd be like, no, I didn't. I choked up too many dot balls. And then I went out when I got bad balls at the end and I couldn't find boundaries. It's not a good innings.
No, I absolutely concur. And then the dismissal was even worse. Came at a terrible time and it's off a full toss. So that doesn't make for great viewing. I think Australia's best batter by a mile in this game was Alex Carey. Yeah. And I've been observing Alex Carey with a very keen eye recently. Even the Sri Lanka test matches, when he got runs, I was like, okay, what is he getting right? And versus spin, he has like 3-4 shots which he completely nails every single time. He's ridiculously good off the sweep. He can also hit the reverse sweep. And slog sweep is also solid. A few that he, you know, nailed went for 6. And then, you know, he also has this penchant to dance down the track and go up and over. And then either he'll go through the covers or over the covers. Literally, that is his wheelhouse versus spin. But today versus pace as well, there was a ramp shot, there was a pull shot, there was this punch down the ground. It was the exact sort of counter punch that Australia needed at that time. And that was the innings that kind of set Australia up for that 300 plus total, because he got his 50 or 48 deliveries and in the end was run out for a 57 ball 60. So, I mean, Stuart Broad said that Alex Carey will be remembered for all the wrong reasons. He's kind of, you know, turning that narrative around.
Yeah, that was always nonsense. No one cared about that. It's funny that you say it's all those options, because I think if you go back and watch all of his play against spin, he generally goes out quite a lot sweeping, reverse sweeping. He's not particularly good at them. I think his biggest issue against spin is that he kind of has to go over cover, which of course against some kinds of spin is not particularly easy, or he goes to deep mid wicket. Yeah. So he's very easy to game plan against. But he's a much more natural player against pace bowling, but he's just busy, man. Again, a bit like Steve Smith, he came out and he played a terrible shot over mid-off, I reckon, early on. And I was like, what is this? But he just understood what he had to do. And because Smith had got stuck, and he really did get stuck at one stage in that innings, Carey allowed Smith to get out of that naturally without Smith having to do anything stupid. I was really impressed by him. Look, it wasn't that long ago I thought he might not play for Australia all that much more. His test batting had completely fallen off. I thought Inglis would take over the role in limited overs cricket. He's fighting on. And I think this shows you the sort of person he is. He was a professional footballer who failed and came back as a professional cricketer. That's the kind of person he is. He's not really outside of wicketkeeping, I'm not sure there's any part of his batting that is like elite, right? But
I mean, think about it, right? He's supposed to be, or he had cemented his place as a wicketkeeper batter, and now he's playing as his specialist batter in this ODI team. So clearly they trust him and he's repaying the faith.
No, I mean, he's just very good at getting jobs done. He's not like an elite world-class player in many facets, but he's very good at just getting the job done.
Yeah, and if you think about it, South Australia combined to score like 99 runs versus India today. So a good day for South Australia, I suppose. Also, just before we take a break, I want to bring up the super chat by Adi the Bug Catcher, who only deals in $10 super chats. That's his thing. He says, new to your channel and been checking out the videos. Love Bairam's sense of humor and the way of presenting. Also, welcome to my city, Jared. Some recommendations, MIT Museum, Veggie Galaxy for lunch. Thanks a bunch, Adi.
One of them I won't. The audience can work out which is which.
You are definitely doing Veggie Galaxy, aren't you? I can totally see that happening.
I have, to be honest, of all the time, the USA is probably one of the few places I would go to a place called Veggie Galaxy, because my God, it is hard to find vegetables in this country at times.
Yeah. Anyway, on that note, we shall take a short break. You guys are watching Good Areas Live with Behram and Jared. So go nowhere, because once we come back, we'll be talking a lot about India.
The scores were level. They just needed a conversation. Instead, the only time they met up was at the same end, and Australia would go on to win that World Cup. In Hit Wicket, you've got those game-changing special abilities at your fingertips. Need to accelerate the scoring? Bang! Activate 2X, and suddenly every boundary is worth double. That's right, a 6 becomes a 12. The opposition won't know what hit them. Or maybe you need to put the brakes on a high-scoring power play. No problem. Unleash the heck, and watch the batter struggle to even score a single run. In fact, they might even end up going backwards. It's absolute chaos. Look at the King of Spin, for example. But there's more to it than just flashy special moves. Every player has their own unique passive traits that add another layer of strategy. Gilly, for example, he's a seam hunter, a nightmare for any pace bowler. And Beefy, well, he's got a golden arm. The longer a partnership lasts, the more dangerous he becomes. Hit Wicket challenges you to think like a true captain. You've got to analyze your players, understand their strengths and weaknesses, and then use those abilities and traits to outwit your opponent. It is a real test of your cricketing brain. Now, if you excuse me, I've got a strategy to revise.
Back to Good Areas Live. You guys are with Behram and Jared. And I guess one thing that I really want to address before we actually get into the analysis is that India have now lost 14 tosses in ODI cricket on the bounce. The last one that they won was versus New Zealand in the ODI World Cup semi-final. And Rohit has lost 11 of those 14, which is ridiculous.
Do you want a fun fact?
I cannot think of... Has someone gone on a worse run than Rohit?
They were favourites to win the toss again today. They've been favourites with, because people bet on the toss, which is mind-blowing to me, but fine. And they were favourites to win the toss again. And it's just like, guys, if these tosses were rigged, they wouldn't have lost 14 in a row. Stop betting on the toss.
Remember when people came up with that conspiracy theory that the tosses were rigged in their favour and now they can't win a single one? It's funny crazy how things funny happen in this world.
Yes, exactly.
What was the percentage? Like, I know the probability percentage was shared in our group. It was like 0.0006% or something like that, man.
It's
of this
low,
happening.
It?
It's, yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah, yeah. I mean, let's see if they can buck that trend in the final.
The truth is, though, that this is how it goes. Like, this is how these sorts of things happen. It's just that, you know, when it's India, we notice more, right? And everyone talks about it. It becomes a talking point. This is a very normal thing to have happen in cricket. It's just that it's India. So everyone puts a flag on it.
I think Sunny Gavaskar would recommend Rohit to go and practice his tosses. But anyway, I don't think that would help because it...
Sunny Gavaskar would be like, wouldn't he be complaining that that NASA and Athas are making too much money off talking about the toss?
Yeah, I suppose that would be the direction that he would take. Anyway, coming to India, I feel like the hallmark of their batting innings was the countless singles that they took. Their rotation of strike was absolutely sublime. And the guy who kind of epitomized that was Virat Kohli. Player of the match with 84 runs. I reckon I saw a stat that this is his 15th player of the match award in ICC events, which is quite remarkable. And if you look at that knock of 84, it had like 5 boundaries, right? Mm. 3 pulls, a dodgy sweep, and that weird plonk over Nathan Ellis's head for 4. That was it. Everything else was singles. And there was also another fun stat that he has like the most singles in ODI since the start of this millennium, since Jan 2000. And if you just count his runs and singles, he would be England's 3rd highest run scorer in ODI cricket ever. So that was a really funny one.
I love
it. Look, it was... it was a masterful knock. He has been the master of the chase plenty of times before for India as well. The chasing any sort of target is synonymous with Virat Kohli. Mm. And I think that's across formats, you could say. Also, in his last 6 ICC knockout games across both limited overs formats, he has scored 50 plus in 5. So remember that whole narrative that Kohli chokes in the big games and doesn't turn up when it's knockout time? He's definitely kind of, you know, rewritten that narrative.
Amen. I can't be dealing with those. I saw someone go on LinkedIn today talk about how Shubman Gill is a busted flush because he didn't make runs today as well. Like, it's just like, my guys, we've just got to stop doing this. If you compare his innings to Steve Smith's, I think it was a lot easier because he knew exactly how much he had to chase. And also, he didn't have to hit boundaries, right? Because he was rotating the strike. But look how hard it was for Steve Smith to even rotate the strike when he was trying to, compared to Virat Kohli. Now, some of that is the bowlers and everything else. Like, I probably prefer to face Cooper Connolly than Akshar Patel, right? But he's a brilliant strike rotator. He really is just one of the best that we've ever seen. And he doesn't get stuck in the way that other players do. And we've seen it in crucial times like the 2023 World Cup. It was certainly one where he went a bit slow. So I think he's just very, very good at just knocking that ball around and keeping the pressure off. And it put so much pressure on Australia. I just think Australia, I know a lot of people are praising Steve Smith's captaincy. I'm not having a go because the bowling lineup he had, but I think he had to be even more proactive today. He had to be recklessly proactive in order to get that wicket. And he wasn't. And so that allowed Virat to play exactly as Virat wanted to play.
Yeah, it was tailor-made for him, really. And he didn't even have to hit that big shot, which, you know, got him out eventually, right? Like that catch at long on. But versus spin, it's like very easy for him to squirt it through mid-on and mid-off. And versus pace, I feel like Virat could dab it to third man till the end of times, regardless of his age. He could just do that at will.
I think the best strike rotators generally just have multiple options. So if you look at Virat Kohli, you can't bowl too straight to him because he'll just tuck that away, right? If you bowl a little bit too full, he can drive to mid-on, to mid-off, to cover. If you're outside off stump, he can also guide down. Like, it's very hard to keep him on strike in that kind of a situation. If the chase was 300, he would have had to play differently. Doesn't mean he doesn't still win the game, but he would have had to play differently. But in this case, it was just like, unless they took a third wicket really early on, there was just no way he was ever going to be under the kind of pressure that he needed to be under.
True. Also, like, they never got back-to-back wickets, did they? They got a wicket and then there was a bit of a partnership and then they got a wicket again. That was kind of how that innings was turning out for Australia from a bowling point of view. And I mean, even if the target was 285, Virat Kohli has 8,000 plus runs in chases alone. He's averaging close to 65 in chases. So I feel like he was still well-placed to figure it out. And I mean, we often talk about Schrodinger's Kohli, but this was different. This wasn't like the T20 World Cup final. He knew how much to get over here, and so he paced his innings accordingly. And I feel like he was completely on top of that. And the only chance Australia had was if, you know, they got a wicket and they removed him, they removed Kohli right after that, which they didn't. And so he stole the spoils and the headlines, which is good on him. But honestly, it wasn't just Kohli. Everyone rotated strike well. Shreyas Iyer, in his knock of 45, was very good at rotating strike. You think of, KL Rahul towards the end, unbeaten on 42. He was exceptional as well. And then Hardik Pandya didn't rotate strike, but then he hit those three massive sixes to kill off the game when it kind of got weird again, right? They needed, 27 off the last four overs? And you were like, why aren't you killing this already, India? And Nathan Ellis was bowling well at that time.
Can I call you
really
on that,
everyone
though?
Everyone pitched in.
I want to call you on that. And here's the thing that I think everyone gets wrong. When Virat Kohli plays the big shot and he goes out, everyone goes, why did he do that? He just needs to keep knocking the ball around, right? And then later on, then you're saying, oh, they didn't kill off the game. That's why he tried to kill off the game, Virat Kohli, and went out. And so, you know, I think we need to understand what ODI cricket is, right? Like, in the same way that it's in a completely, without knowing who the bowlers were and who the opposition was, you could say that Steve Smith played a good innings. But once you factor in the game situation and where they were, it doesn't work that way. So I think you have to be very, very fair. Like, I'm not really against Steve Smith for going out to that full toss. It's a full toss he should have hit. But at that stage, he was looking for boundaries. I'm more upset about the bit in the middle of his innings where he couldn't score, where his strike rate went down for 10 balls. It was like 20 or something, right? We got two runs off 10 balls or whatever it was in the middle of his innings when he's set. And I think it's the same. I think it's the same sort of thing. So I think Kohli plays differently if he has to in this game. But I thought from the start with this chase that I think I said on Discord that they would lose probably, I can't remember if I said between 5 and 7 wickets or 4 and 6 wickets, right? I always thought they were going to lose wickets in this chase. And so they played it in a way that always kept it ahead. But they did get behind a runner ball. And all you need is for Hardik Pandya to hit that first ball straight up in the air and Jadeja to get a good ball from Nathan Ellis, who chips back to the bowler. And this is a very, very interesting game. So there's a couple of times when Australia could have kept it interesting, but what Australia couldn't do is sort of blast through with a wicket. Like, have a look at Akshar's wicket.
Yeah.
That is just from a swipe, right? Like, and the Indian players didn't play many shots like that.
Also, Akshar is a bit of a luxury at this point. I don't think he's a floater anymore, Jared. He's batting at 5 quite
he's
consistently.
He's a permanent floater. He's the Mick Ryan. He's the Sunil Narine.
Yeah. Just to like kind of add to that earlier point, in that very over, KL Rahul had hit some big shots. He just hit a six, right? So maybe at that particular point, Kohli didn't require to do that because they needed less than run a ball at that point, right? They let it get to that weird zone where they needed 27 off the last four because Hardik wasn't really getting going until he hit those three mighty sixes. But you also have a point, so I understand that. It was just, it could have been far more interesting if Australia just caught wickets in clusters at any one given phase, which never happened. There was always some runs between wickets, and this was that sort of target where that would have been enough.
No, I agree. I think you're right. In any stage, if they got two wickets in a row, because I kept thinking that. I kept thinking, geez, just two wickets in a row here completely changes this for Australia. But they just never did that. And part of that is down to the strike rotation we were talking about before, right? Whereas Australia just didn't have that. And so they put pressure on themselves. And sometimes they had to take risks like the running between wickets or Maxwell's shot because they just kept getting behind.
And they, like, if they had taken at least one of those three drop catches, even if they dismissed Rohit on 13 or 14, you know, he doesn't go on to score 28. They lose two wickets earlier. You never know what's going to happen. It's the butterfly effect.
I actually think that Rohit innings, and he was, you know, he was tinny as hell. Like, he almost pulled the ball back onto his stumps and everything. Australia got him out just at the right time. But also, he did do a little bit of damage. He didn't quite knock the top off the chase, though. But he did do enough damage where you're just like, because I think at that stage, he was like 28 of 25 not long before he went out. And I was like, God, two more fours here.
Yeah, he did enough damage to get them to a 50-plus score in the power play, right? And that was enough when you're chasing 260-odd, right? So I think that was important in the context of the game. And on this surface in particular, or in these conditions which Dubai is offering, Rohit's quick-fire 30s and 40s are more often than not going to prove to be enough for India. So he's playing his role correctly.
Yeah, no. If he bats for another 15 minutes, Australia's probably almost out of that game just because he would have got, what was he out in the 7th or 8th over?
He was out in the 8th over, I believe.
Yeah. So if he gets to the end of the power play and gets another 15, 16 runs and then attacks the spinners as well, I would have been gone, no, it's fine. That's his job and he's doing it very well. I mean, he was batting horribly, but he was doing his job well, if that makes sense. Can you do that? I think you can.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he captained well as well. He always gets flack for his captaincy. And recently, some minister in India was fat-shaming the man as well. Look, he's gotten you to four consecutive finals. Yeah, this happened. All these four finals that we just counted, World Test Championship, ODI World Cup, T20 World Cup and Champions Trophy, he's gotten India there. He's become the only individual to do so also, I believe, which is a record. This might be his last, right? Tournament as India's captain. So he could potentially go on a high over here. And I feel like he deserves a lot more credit than he gets. If anything, he is scapegoat number one when things don't go right, weirdly enough.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Let's move on. He was fine today. Yeah. I mean, he batted terribly and still did his job. That's the world.
Basically. Anyway, let's come to India's bowling. Of course, you know, the scorecard suggests that Mohammad Shami's effort of 3 for 48 was the best one and most successful for India. And I mean, he did pretty well with the new ball. They couldn't get bat on ball. And in the end, like, he got the bonus wicket of Smith and another wicket towards the end. But that double breakthrough by Jadeja, that was very, very crucial, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's probably, I mean, I thought Smith, if the one thing I thought he did brilliantly in his innings was how he played Chakravarti. He kind of took Chakravarti out of the game because Chakravarti just couldn't work out how to bowl to him, right? Unfortunately, you know, for Australia, the Smith and Inglis wickets, which were pretty close together, what, 4 or 5 overs apart, whatever it was, that was the bit that they never quite 100% recovered from, even when Carey came back in. So I think from that point of view, they were just not quite in the right place. So I thought he bowled well. I thought he bowled well against New Zealand as well. Chakravarti's probably been stealing the wickets and Mohammad Shami's been stealing the wickets, but I think Jadeja's been bowling really well so far. And to be fair, against New Zealand, that pitch was like made in a lab for him. This one wasn't. And he went for a few extra runs at times.
Yeah, I mean, Marnus just played the wrong shot, but Jadeja kind of squeezed him out, you could say. And then the Inglis one was a soft dismissal, but those two came in quick succession. And that's kind of what put Australia on the back foot, despite the fact that Carey and Smith were able to put that partnership. Also, Chakravarti, sure, Smith nullified him, but despite him going for runs, he picks up two wickets, right? 2 for 48 or something. So India's bowling unit, I think it's coming along pretty nicely. Kuldeep, although, is not getting wickets. So what's your take over there?
Oh, I've done so much on Kuldeep. I think he's bowling a little bit slower. I think he's just not fully fit, if we're being honest. I think he's just not fully fit. And so, but he's doing his job. He, you know, he came on today in the power play and was never bowled in the power play, and he bowled fine. And what, how many runs per over did he go for today?
A fair bit today, no?
5.5.
They took him on.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a lot more than he should be going for, I suppose. Oh, well, actually, well, I don't care about the runs per over. I expect wickets from Kuldeep.
But he hasn't taken wickets in ages.
Incision is what you want.
Have you never been following all my videos saying he doesn't take wickets anymore? Look, 5.5, I think is acceptable. I don't have any issue with it. I'd be absolutely fine with that. I think the wrist spinners struggled a little bit more on this wicket than the finger spinners did, because Chakravarti went for more runs than I expected and didn't take his wickets. Zampa went for runs, and Kuldeep went for a little bit for runs. So it was probably a wicket a little bit more suited to finger spin. And sometimes you get that, right?
Yeah. Fair enough. Also, we've got a super chat sort of related to the same, talking point. It's from Raj Machol, who I think his name is Shubham Razdan or someone else's Shubham Razdan. Anyway, the question is, should India play Ashdeep or Harshit Rana ahead of Kuldeep in the final? I don't think so. I think they should just go with the same bowling attack. The four-pronged spin quartet is kind of working, and New Zealand or South Africa both would, in theory, struggle.
It just depends on the wicket, right? If they think they need an extra seamer, then he's probably the person to miss out. If they don't need the extra seamer, then they won't do it. I would just look at the pitch and make a decision on the day. I would assume they'll go with the extra spinner, but they have that flexibility if they need it.
Yeah. And Bharat Ramchandran has asked a similar question. He says, should India, it's not similar, but he says, should India bat first in the final if they win the toss? Will it be a fresh pitch for the final as well? Rana might play ahead of Kuldeep. So apparently there was a fresh pitch today, and every single game that we've seen in the UAE or in Dubai, has minutely behaved differently. Today was the weirdest one because as the innings progressed in the second innings. Yeah.
Yeah. This is the third different pitch.
It got easier to bat on.
Isn't it? That they've gone with so far.
Yeah.
So
I don't even think like the Indian think tank knows. Like Rohit at the toss was saying it's a good toss to lose because I didn't know what to do.
I'm pretty sure Crick Info said, I'm pretty sure that they said it was a different wicket that was being used. So no one seemed to know what this wicket was. And then as we both said, I just thought Australia's best chance was Cooper Connolly and Glenn Maxwell just digging it into a stodgy pitch. And it seemed to get easier to bat on as it went on, right? And so it was very weird from that point of view. But I would still bat first at the moment, because I think it gives you two bites of the cherry. It gives you, if the wicket does get worse, that. And then it also gives you the dew, right?
But the dew hasn't really arrived.
The dew's second.
The dew hasn't arrived at all.
No, the dew hasn't arrived in Dubai, has it? No, yes. So I bat first. Nope. That's what I meant. I'm confusing myself now.
Cricket media used to be pretty simple. Find your favourite newspaper, head to Cricket Info, and maybe a blog you'd like. Now just finding the best stories and writing is a huge challenge. You already have a job. You just want to read about cricket. Well, that is what the best of cricket is currently doing. They go out daily to find the newest cricket coverage and the best stories from any publication in the world. And when they can't discover what they want, they also hire some of the best writers to produce their own great stories. You can get the best of cricket via their website or on WhatsApp. They find cricket's best stories and give them to you every day.
Yeah. I mean, I think batting first is just the safer option over here, because if there is going to be no dew, you'd want to score. And if you get to 275, 280, especially if you're India, then I think it's game over. But even if you're the opposition team, you'd still be a bit, encouraged that potentially you could defend that total. It might be hard because India's got a solid batting lineup and there are good players of spin in there. But I feel like that's the golden number. 280 to 290 would really be a handful to chase on this sort of track in these conditions.
I think if Australia had a full strength bowling attack today, they might win that game. Right? Well, at the very least, I reckon it's almost 50-50 going into the chase. I probably still would have favoured India.
Zampa's first string, he went for runs, 60 of them, but he did take two wickets. I don't know. I expect more for him, I suppose.
Yeah, but he's first string. Yeah. Where he's the main bowler in the attack, whereas generally he's one of four main bowlers in the attack, right?
True.
So I'm just going to put it out there. Dwarshus is not quite at the level of Cummins, Hazelwood and Stark, mate. Do you know what I mean? Nathan Ellis, very good defensive bowler, and that's not the bowler you want for that game. Nathan Ellis is the guy they wanted in Pakistan. They want strike bowlers.
Here's a question for you. Would you take Tanvir Sangha over Rahul Chahar?
I would pick Rahul Chahar.
Yeah, I'd probably pick Rahul Chahar as well. I mean, the cornrows do it for me alone. But that's the thing over here.
But he wouldn't have helped either.
Spinner was better than Tanvir Sangha,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, he wouldn't have helped either because he's a bit of a defensive leg spinner as well. So who would you need? Mm. You would need... you probably just need...
Ashton Agar, but he's also a defensive option.
That's
right?
What I mean. There really aren't that many. Maybe Swepson would have been handy for them today. It's very hard. It's very hard to come up with that right lineup.
What if Usman Kadir never went back to Pakistan to chase that dream and stuck around in Australia? He would have been a handful.
Yeah. I never thought of him as a very good one-day spinner. Anyway, I don't know you've gone down this rabbit hole.
Attacking spinner, though. He was garbage because he'd bowled too many bad deliveries, but his wrong un was good and he was an attacking option. But of course, that was never going to happen anyway. What else do we have in the Super Chats? Varun, give it to us because I can't scroll at this point. Also, sorry, before we go to the Super Chats, Aurora, hold up. There is this comment by Greatest of All Time saying, Waseh Habib from Pakistan does much better analysis than these. If you want Jared and myself to engage in a screaming contest, we're not going to give it to you. You're more than welcome to go to their analysis. We're fine with that.
Analysis? Well, that's not analysis, is it? That's yelling.
Yeah. Anyway, Aurora Karthik with his Super Chat asks, who will India prefer to face in the final? I don't think it matters to them. Although I will say this, Jared. New Zealand have played in Dubai, so they have that advantage. But South Africa are probably better positioned to beat India because they've got Klaassen and Maharaj and Miller.
New Zealand is the answer. Because...
Really? Oh, yeah. India would want to face New Zealand.
Yeah, because there are more ways that South Africa can cause problems for India than New Zealand can. New Zealand need a very specific set of circumstances to be able to beat India. They can still beat them. I'm not saying this isn't an impregnable Indian side, right? But I think a lot of things need to go their way. I don't think as many things need to go South Africa's way. If you're just talking teams, if you're talking about the history of ICC tournaments, then obviously you would prefer to play South Africa. But realistically, if you're basing the team, I think South Africa is a really good side. You know, if Lungi and Ngidi gets injured before the semi-final or the final, I think they'll be a much better side.
I think they might just play Tabriz Shamsi ahead of Ngidi in Dubai because they need that extra spin option.
That's also not going to work.
Yeah, of course. I mean, he could take off both his shoes and ring up both of his coaches. He still probably isn't good enough to wreck India, I suppose. But like Aidan Markram's fitness issues are there as well. That quite a big hit.
I've also heard that they were really sick as a team. So I know it was, you might have heard that they had, but they were really sick. So not all their players will have recovered. They should have by the final, but they might not have by tomorrow.
I don't think they should play Markram tomorrow because they won't particularly need him in Lahore. And Stubbs could do a job in the middle order as well. But yes, I mean, if they do make it to the final, then you've got Markram, Klaassen, who is elite versus spin, and Miller. Three players who could derail India with the bat, potentially, especially if the top order gives them a start. And then don't write off KG Rabada, who has a brilliant record versus Rohit Sharma. And Jansen is one of the better new ball bowling options. They also bat deep. Jansen at 8, Mulder at 7. They are the best suited team to defeat India in this tournament. And even then, I feel like India are odds-on favourites, like easily.
No, look, South Africa is the second best team in the tournament. I've been saying that before the tournament started. Nothing has changed. New Zealand play really good cricket. And honestly, if Matt Henry takes a bunch of wickets early on, good luck.
Yeah, true. And plus, you know, in Lahore, we've seen two different kinds of playing conditions. One is the batting track where dew comes and you can chase 350 easily. And then you've got that weird first 10 over game, right? Australia and Afghanistan, where anything can happen in those 10 overs. Literally, you could lose the game in the first 10 overs. So let's see what happens tomorrow. Anyway, Drick Jeet edits with a super chat. Says, Scotty Boland for the first 10 and middle overs while Todd Murphy partnering Zampa. Why not Australia? Why isn't Australia selecting them as an alternative for Cummins, Hazelwood, and Stark in the squad? Well, you've made him cough, guys.
For what format? Is this ODI cricket? look, I worked with Scott Boland when he was at, and Adam Zampa when they were at Melbourne Stars. I don't think Australia have lost this Champions Trophy because Scott Boland and Todd Murphy were not bowling together. Todd Murphy isn't a very good fit for this side because you've already got Maxwell. So it's harder to actually fit his bowling in. Scott Boland, he's just not that same level of bowler with the white ball as he is with the red ball, which is remarkable because he made his debut in ODI cricket. But he's like the Dawid Milan of Australian cricket. I remember when he got picked, I was like, have they seen him bowl with the white ball before? It's not really his thing. Yeah, no.
Oh, I love this from Arco. Arco is saying, hey, guys, what about Chris Green, though? Wink, wink. Chris Lynn.
I was going to say, they would have won if they picked Chris Green, Cameron Green, and Chris Lynn. That would have won them this game. That was the trio.
Yeah, the double Chris, double Green, I suppose. Also, Adi the Bug Catcher, once again with a generous super chat. Thanks, Adi. Says, damn, you guys get really deep in your analysis. Yeah, that's what we're kind of about at the Good Areas channel, Adi. He says, I don't know of any other channel where I get such information overload and get to learn so much. Not saying that I agree 100% with you, though. That's fine. You're allowed to disagree. But we kind of specialize in the overload. In fact, Jared is mostly telling me off air that you've got to leave a few things. And I'm like, nah. My OCD kicks in.
you're not supposed to agree with everything, but know this, we do the work, right? So if you watch a video of ours or a podcast of ours, I've never worked with a podcast host who does as much work as Bayron does for podcasts, because people just don't do that. We do so much stuff, and there are so many people working behind the scenes, but also just the amount of work that we do on any project, right? Whether it be writing a book or writing a documentary or, you know, working on our channel or whatever that may be, just remember that. But also remember that we've been on air for 47 minutes. Before that, I was on air for another 42 minutes on another podcast. And before that,
I was on another podcast.
He was on another podcast.
I was on Pro Sports.
And I had the scoreboard, right? When you are talking for 45 minutes straight, even in one bit, you're probably going to say things that other people don't agree with. And you're also, it's not like we're sitting here going, is this 100% factually correct? There are going to be things that you don't agree with, but know this, we do the work. And that's all I want anyone to know. I don't, you know, that's the most important thing. You know that when we come here, we've done the work. Unlike the 64 greatest ODI batters where I had done absolutely no work.
Yeah, sometimes we have those. Interestingly enough, I'm seeing some comments in which they're suggesting that George Linda might be brought in as a traveling reserve, but someone would have to go out injured for that, the scene uploader. So losing Markram would be a bigger hit.
Indeedy?
Oh, maybe.
actually,
wouldn't it be one-dimensional then with Linda and Maharaj and Markram?
I suppose Linda, I don't know how much the SA20 you watched. He batted really, really well. So George Linda is basically the Cooper Connolly, but experienced, isn't he? And look, you're right. I think the wicket probably needs the rag for him to bowl a lot. But can him and Markram get by with 10 overs between them? Maybe? But then you got Weir Mulder.
Let's count the left-handers, right? If you want Markram to be successful, you've got the likes of... I'm completely blanking on the team right now. Wait, they don't have a lot. Akshar?
They haven't beaten New Zealand yet.
Yeah, true. They haven't beaten New Zealand.
Akshar is the one that he would go up against. So maybe with a team with a bunch of right-handers, you can try the George Linda thing a little bit more. But I really enjoyed watching him play in the SA20. And I've never been a massive fan of his.
We've lost you. I can't hear you anymore, Jared. Your volume is gone. So maybe the lapel mic is out of battery, potentially. I'll keep you guys company till he figures this out. Seen a few trolls in the comments saying that Gaddafi Stadium has been knocked out of the Champions Trophy. Well, wait till tomorrow. Tomorrow it'll be officially knocked out from the Champions Trophy. And it does suck. But I also have a bone to pick with all the people who are crying over this, because we always knew this. Should have made a ruckus when this tournament was, or the hybrid solution was decided upon.
So today I put up a tweet, right, where I was saying Australia should stop dropping Rohit Sharma, right? And so this guy, and I don't even know where the guy's from, but I don't know if he was Australian or English or New Zealand, but because I couldn't work it out from his profile. But he's going, oh, how come you're not talking about the Dubai wicket now at Alps India? And it's like, well, we've mentioned it 200 times, right? If you suddenly...
We've also said that India would be favourites on most surfaces. Maybe like really difficult seam bowling conditions, another team would be better off suited to them. But I don't know, man. And, like people are just... they've gone off the rails on this at this
and
point.
And we were so far ahead of this story. If you've been following this channel, we were literally... When we were saying from the start, this tournament's not going to be in Pakistan. It's not going to be played. India are certainly not going to play in Pakistan. Most likely they're going to play in Dubai. Yep. You remember there were all these other possibilities that I kept saying, India's just going to play in Dubai, everyone. I was months ahead of this. Bayram was months ahead of this. Don't moan when we want to make fun of the fact that Australia keep dropping Rohit Sharma on Twitter. Follow our work or fuck off.
Yeah. I think we were talking about this a year ago, right? Not even months. Yeah, and after that Asia Cup debacle in 2023, I was so sure that something similar will happen this time. If anything, they told Pakistan maybe more, a few more months in advance than I thought they would, right? And sure, I'm not saying don't create a ruckus. It sucks. Look, I cover cricket in Pakistan. It sucks that they won't get to host the final. But this noise should have been made earlier. Right now, it just makes you sound like a sore loser. That's all it does. Anyway,
yeah.
Keshav Huria with a super chat says, on a side note, what's worse, Rahane being made KKR captain or Salman Ali Agha being made Pakistan T20 captain? I think it's probably the Rahane one, because does he even get into the starting 11?
Rahane, my favorite bit was that they announced who their vice captain was, right? And we know why. It's because Indian culture is still obsessed with vice captains and no one else is. But there's a part of me going, are they basically saying, just so you know, if Rahane doesn't make it, we're bringing Venky straight in. We're putting it out there because he's in the photo. It's literally the photo they put up of Ajinkya Rahane as new captain. Venky did it. And it's not it. If you read it, it says something like, welcome to our new leadership group. I'm like...
Yeah, I saw that little short that you created on Instagram. By the way, I love those. I think you should continue to do more of those. Also, Salman is probably the first Pakistan vice captain who's actually been made captain, because Pakistan too has an obsession of naming vice captains who never make it to that captaincy role. This is probably a first, but my pick would have been Shadab, because at least he can slog versus spin in the middle overs, which is something that Pakistan can't do anymore.
Well, as a captain,
let's not go to Pakistan cricket, Keshav. I mean, yeah, if he bats at number four, Shadab, he could probably capitalize in the middle overs with the bat.
Do you think he'd bowl himself?
He probably doesn't
bowl himself. He probably plays as a specialist batter if he's a captain, I reckon.
Yeah, and he is the fifth bowling option alongside Salman, probably, and they share their overs. That's what I'm assuming.
He pulls what I like to call the Cameron White, where Cameron White, the minute he became captain, he went, so my bowling days are done, and I'll see you guys later.
Yeah, anyway, we have one more super chat, Varun, I believe. So bring that up so we can end this show.
I don't think we do.
Jared's throat. Oh, we don't? Oh, well, why does this say starred? It's actually done. All right, then. Thank you guys for interacting with us in the comments, and thank you for your super chats as well. That is going to be all for today's show. Just a quick reminder, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. That can prove to be a one-stop shop for all the work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, videos, or podcasts. We'll be back live again tomorrow, probably at a later hour because my day is stacked, so I'll be kind of working that out with Jared after the show. But you guys better come back tomorrow as well, because there's a big, big semi-final tomorrow, and we'll be back on Good Areas. So have a good one, enjoy yourselves, and goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.